diversity, diversity, diversity.
Yes, of course, confusion.
Oh, fascist moron.
Well, hello everyone. I did a longer video than usual this morning, so this should be a shorter office hours than usual, even though the story for today, or the big news at the moment, is somewhat disconcerting, especially if you are watching here in Blighty, where the entire British establishment, media, government, talking heads of all sorts seem to have gone absolutely ballistic in the past week or so. And I have to tell you, friends, I'm a little bit worried ahead of this meeting between Starmer and Trump on Thursday. I've called the stream The Drums of War. Why have I called it The Drums of War? I've called it that because the rhetoric is getting more and more insane. And now that America has definitively dropped Ukraine under Trump, you'd think that the British establishment would, be gearing up to follow suit. That is not what is happening. They are digging in. And if you watch my video from earlier on, where I read not one, but four, you know, literally insane articles in the British media, one of them by Douglas Murray, by the way, one of them by a former general, the former commander, leader of the European NATO forces. Later on this week, I also have a video where I look at the an interview that the former head of MI6 gave to the BBC. And I'm telling you, a lot of signs are pointing towards Britain not letting this go. I'll have a look at more of these signs coming up, but it's starting to make me a little bit nervous about the prospect of these of the madman Starmer, an absolute psychopath, taking us into war with Russia. Now, some of my American friends, notably Charlemagne, and I've seen this kind of take doing the rounds, over on American Twitter, has been saying, well, maybe Britain and America, Starmer and Trump, are doing good cop, bad cop. Tell you what, if they're doing good cop, bad cop, this may be the best kayfabe I've ever seen, because they don't seem like they're messing around at all. In all my years of following the news, I have never seen the British establishment as hysterical as I've seen them in the past week. And it doesn't matter where you turn, the spectre of World War II, Winston Churchill, 1938, 1939, all of that rhetoric is omnipresent, and it is starting to get a little bit worrying that they're just not backing down. I think they've got a plan, the European elites, to try to ride this out, to try to defy Trump, and to, you know, continue what they started in Ukraine. Well, anyway, before we get going here, I do have a new advert for Foundations of Shakespeare, which I'll play in a second. After that, we're going to watch the announcement just now from Keir Starmer about increasing the defense budget. And then after that, we're going to have a little look at what's been happening in and around this story and what some of the media are saying. Then we'll do the super chat, super thanks, and get out of here. So, all right, Foundations of Shakespeare. Buy it now, everyone.
Who was Shakespeare? What if everything you have been taught about Shakespeare is wrong? What you need is a non-woke university-level Shakespeare course based on solid scholarship, stripping out all recent nonsense since 1980. A comprehensive introduction to studying Shakespeare, featuring 14 lectures and covering 8 major plays. A Midsummer Night's Dream, As You Like It, Twelfth Night, Measure for Measure, Hamlet, Othello, King Lear, and Macbeth. Foundations of Shakespeare. Buy it now from the Academic Agency.
All right, guy in the chat who's saying that Shakespeare was Persian, banned. Guy in the chat saying Shakespeare was a black woman, banned. Don't even joke. No, or third person saying that Shakespeare was a black woman, banned. No, he wasn't. He was a bald-headed man from Stratford-upon-Avon. That's what he was. He grew up working for his father in a glove maker's shop. As a kind of newly aspirant middle class, coming from the old gentry. Married a woman called Anne Hathaway, not the Hollywood actress, but a local woman from Stratford. And then he moved to London when he was 18, made his name in the theatre. He wasn't a black woman, and he wasn't from Persia either. Although, I mean, the only bit where Persia would be relevant for Shakespeare and his plays, which I think I touch on somewhere in the lecture on Othello, is that around the time that Elizabeth I was in power, the Persians were looking to make allies with the European powers against their common Ottoman enemy. The Ottomans were on maneuvers during this period in history. The Persians, perennial foes of the Ottomans, sent a delegation all around Europe. It was a big deal. In fact, I think that Persian delegation brought a couple of tigers with them. And it was one of the first times that anyone had seen a tiger in Europe or in Britain. And it was a massive deal just the sight of these tigers. But anyway, they basically came with a view to enlist European alliances against the Ottomans. And that is a relevant backdrop, I would say, relevant backstory for Othello, where the Ottomans are a kind of looming threat in the background. So that would probably be one area where the Persians would be relevant to Shakespeare, but it's kind of tangential or very much in the background. I'd be interested to know if Shakespeare could have even pointed to Persia on a map. It'd be interesting to know that. But anyway, let's get back to the matter at hand, which is the drums of war. I'm, like I was saying before the advert, increasingly worried that this is not going in a very good direction. I mean, if Starmer's just going to meet with Trump and back down on Thursday, he set himself up for an almighty kind of humiliation, because the media has been building this up. The media has been calling basically for Britain to lead Europe. And these are the exact phrases: Britain must lead Europe against Putin. That has been the line in all of the media: Guardian, Telegraph, Mirror, Sun, Times, even on the BBC, right? It has been blanket. This is what should happen. So I don't think that we're being set up for a back down from Starmer here. As we're going into this meeting, here is the announcements that the Starmer has just made. We'll watch this, and then I'll have a look at some of the headlines and so on. Like I said earlier on, depending on what happens on that meeting, I may do a special stream on Thursday, an emergency stream, depending on the outcome of that. But at the moment, the mood music, as you might say, is not looking good. It's looking like the British establishment is going to dig in on this all of the way. And even more delusionally, I think they're backing themselves to pull a Churchill and convince Trump to, convince Trump somehow to back down and to carry on in some way, or at least not give the Russians what they're looking for, or convince Trump that he's got more leverage or something. Anyway, let's watch this speech and then we'll come back.
And announce this government will begin the biggest sustained increase in defence spending since the end of the Cold War. Yeah. We will deliver our commitment to spend 2.5% of GDP on defence, but we will bring it forward so that we reach that level in 2027.
Yeah. Look at the faces of Angela, Reyna and Rachel Reeve there. They look like they haven't slept in about 3 weeks. Look at the bloody faces on them. You'd swear somebody had died. I mean, this is, I'm telling you, this is grim. It's really grim what's happening here. I really am hoping for somebody to wake up in Westminster. But the bubble is thick. Nothing gets through to these people at all. They are hell-bent in a way that, honestly, I find it scary. It's like a kind of religious. I mean, it's like these people have got, jihad. It's like religious. It's like a religious conviction these people have that they're not going to let this go. And again, the reasons for it are still elude me. All of the reasons people have offered don't make any sense to me, or they don't seem to justify. It's not just the level of conviction, it's the blanket unanimity of it across both parties and across every single sector of the media. In fact, the only person, the only major, and I say major, the only person who's spoken out against it has been Peter Hitchens, but that's very, very often the case, that Hitchens is the only, is like the sole voice, the Cassandra in the wind type thing. Anyway, let's continue.
And we will maintain that for the rest of this Parliament. And let me spell that out, Mr. Speaker. That means spending £13.4 billion more on defence every year from 2027. But, Mr. Speaker, we also face enemies that are sophisticated in cyber attacks, sabotage, even assassination. And so our intelligence and security services are an increasingly vital part of protecting both us and our allies. So on top of the funding of 2.5% that I've just announced, going forward we will recognise the incredible contribution of our intelligence and security services to the defence of the nation, which means taken together we will be spending 2.6% on our defence from 2027. Yeah. But Mr. Speaker, we must go further still. I've long argued that in the face of ongoing generational challenges, all European allies must step up.
Bloody hell, did you see that there? Energy prices to rise by 6.4% in April. My God, my energy bill is already insane, and now I have to pay it even more. And they're taking us to war. Something has to give here. Don't forget, everybody, this government is on 14% approval rating. Nobody likes this fucker. And he's going to take us to war? Don't forget, I have to pay energy twice. Once for the lodge and once for my home as well. God's sake.
Europe.
By the trivium, everyone. I can sniff a sale coming, I tell you.
European allies must step up and do more for our own defence. So subject to economic and fiscal conditions and aligned with our strategic and operational needs, we will also set a clear ambition for defence spending to rise to 3% of GDP in the next Parliament. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I want to be very clear. The nature of warfare has changed significantly. That is clear from the battlefield in Ukraine. And so we must modernise and reform our capabilities as we invest. I equally want to be very clear that, like any other investment we make, we must seek value for money. And that's why we're putting in place a new defence reform and efficiency plan, jointly led by my right honourable friends, the Chancellor and the Defence Secretary. Yeah. This investment means that the UK will strengthen its position as a leader in NATO and in the collective defence of our continent.
Oh, bloody hell. I mean, it's pretty important to understand how ill-equipped we are to face this challenge. Even if they're going to increase the defence spending, successive governments have allowed the British military to deteriorate to the point where it has got absolutely zero chance across the board in any conflict with the Russians. Now, what the Europeans are thinking is that between them, right, between all of the European nations, they have a much larger GDP than Russia, okay? But the trouble is that Russia has been spending 40% of its GDP on military and is on, right, a full-scale war economy, war footing, okay? And it has been, since the Ukraine war started. And on top of that, due to sanctions, it has made itself more autarkic. That is, it has increased its manufacturing capacity across the board and is now making things it was not making, prior to the war. Now, that has not been the case in Europe, who, despite all of these challenges coming, has basically, continued to operate in the so-called postmodern paradise of the neocon moment. Remember Robert Kagan, Power and Paradise? Power and Paradise, do you remember that book? Paradise and Power, whatever it was called. Well, okay, I mean, Donald Trump is right about this aspect of things, that Europe, if it wants to have a seat at this table, it's going to have to step up. The thing is, even if they all put in the 2.5%, 3%, however much in terms of GDP, that's still just money, right? To get back up to a war economy, to a war scale footing, it's going to take a lot of time to be able to rearm, to be able to have the manufacturing capacity for a lot of these things, right? I mean, it would have been possible had successive governments from Thatcher onwards here not sold the country by the pound, sold off all our manufacturing capacity, sold off all our steelworks to foreign interests, sold off quote-unquote green energy, got rid of all our coal mines and our, all of our energy security, all of our, basic underlying security assets have been sold off. They've been diminished. And as a result, we barely have an army anymore. We barely have a navy anymore. And we barely have an air force anymore. Okay, this increase in defense spending from Starmer may start to, redress that balance. But the fact of the matter is, if they're talking about war with Russia, that war's going to happen now, right? If they're talking about taking this conflict with Putin further, they're going to face it. They're going to be facing that now, not in 10 years or in 15 or 20 years, however long it's going to take to undo all of that damage that has been done since the 1980s. I mean, I've got reports here that whether it's the RAF, whether it is the Navy, or whether it is the Army, they are in an absolutely horrible state, the British Armed Forces. Okay, there was a parliamentary report into the state of the Air Force. Okay. That was commissioned, I think, under Sunak. And they concluded that in any head-to-head with Russia, the entire RAF fleet would be wiped out in a matter of days. Okay, it is deteriorated to that extent. Okay, I have a report here that the Royal Navy has shrunk to the point where it has more admirals than warships. More admirals than warships. Okay, that's the Royal Navy. Once the Navy that ruled the world, now it has more admirals than warships. This was a report in the Times just today, the 25th of February. The British Army's aging rifles are the laughing stock of Europe. NATO allies poke fun at snipers' equipment and the rounds used in standard issue arms would be useless against the Russians and the Chinese, sources claim. British soldiers have been laughed at by European armies for their aging rifles. Right, now all of this could be ammunition in the media to try to justify or, you know, create a clamour for an increase in war spending. But the point is, the trajectory that this is taking taking us towards is onto an almost inevitable conflict with the Russians. And my question is, what is the plan if they're taking us in this direction, i.e. towards conflict rather than towards peace? What is their plan if the worst of their fears comes true and, you know, Putin doesn't just stop in Ukraine and carries on? What's their plan? And that this is not even taking into account missiles and hypersonics and nuclear and all of that. I still don't really know what they're playing at here. Look, here is the Daily Mirror. This is the front page of the Mirror right now. Trump talks call for quote unquote strong Starmer to save Ukraine and defend Europe from wider war. That's the Daily Mirror. Now, if you don't know the British media, the Daily Mirror is the left-wing paper, okay? The left-wing version of the Sun, okay? So traditionally, in British media, the right wing has been rah-rah pro-war, you know, the Churchills, okay? And the left have traditionally been more pacifist or anti-war, a la Jeremy Corbyn. That has not been the case on Ukraine. Whether it's The Guardian, The Mirror, they are all basically on the same hymn sheet. Starmer must be strong. Starmer must stand up to Putler. Starmer must stand up to Cheeto Hitler, right? Starmer must stand up to Trump. Tell Trump where to go and lead Europe into battle. What disconcerts me is that this rhetoric is not just coming from crazies. It's coming from former generals. It's coming from former MI5 and MI6 bosses. It's coming from the kind of top brass in the British establishment. And I'm very, very worried about it. I'm telling you that. I'm really worried about it. On top of all of that, we also still have puff pieces in our papers. So this is the Times lead today. This woman here owns a bistro. She's Ukrainian, and she's banned Donald Trump from. She says the U.S. president deserves terrible food. That's on the front page of the Times today. So that's how that's the level of seriousness. On top of all this other stuff, we still have shit like that in our media as well. Okay, we still have stuff like these sorts of puff pieces. And I was hoping that some realism might kick in, and realism is not kicking in. What is kicking in is a delusional level of cope far, far beyond Britain's current capacity. Okay, all of the World War II comparisons leave out the fact that Churchill had the entire British Empire to liquidate. Right, the British Empire wasn't small. Churchill had over a fifth of the world under his command when he was belligerent and wanting to take us into World War II. First of all, it was Neville Chamberlain, don't forget, that actually took us in. Then it was Churchill. So we don't have a fifth of the world under our command. We've got a greatly diminished army, greatly diminished air force, and greatly diminished navy. So, you know, repeatedly going on and on about the spirit of Churchill is still basically dangerously delusional at this point in time. Just before this meeting happened, before Macron and Trump yesterday, here was Macron meeting with Trump. There was some odd body language stuff between the two of them, because I don't know why they love to climb all over each other. There's always been this weird game between Macron and Trump, you know, for who can like physically dominate the other one. It's all a bit strange. But just before this meeting happened, if you remember, Starmer snuck across there to France and met with Macron. And basically, they've got a plan, the European elites, right? That Macron and Starmer are going to stand as one with Ursula von der Leyen, right? The Ursula von der Leyen, the EU president or whatever she is. And they're all going to be on the same page that Trump has made a mistake and that doesn't, no matter what, we're going to stand with Ukraine. Trouble is, the Americans are not falling for this. It's like, I mean, maybe Trump has got enough base people behind him, right? Behind the scenes there to be like, look at what they did in World War II. And in fact, look at what they did in World War I, the British. Now look at what happened in World War II when, right, fool me once, fool me twice. It's not going to happen a bloody third time. And hopefully Trump is based enough to understand that Britain is not going to drag the world into World War III after doing it two times already, right? I mean, I'm sorry, but the objective facts are is that Britain started World War II, okay? That, I mean, Trump suggested that, by the way, and that was all over the media as well. I mean, there's been tons of hysteria about that as well. But interesting things are happening because Trump is going the other way. And this happened. The US signed it with Russia in UN resolutions on Ukraine. And the votes were coming in. And notably, Israel voted against the resolution as well. And I noticed that Iran and Iraq remained neutral on that vote, which was interesting to look at. But yes, the US sided with Russia against the UN resolutions on Ukraine. This was called a massive betrayal by the usual suspects. Now, Putin has offered Trump rare minerals from Ukraine. And the counteroffer from the Rat King has been that the Rat King has said, well, I'll go. If you let Ukraine join NATO, I'll give up the presidency. Okay. Now, from Donald Trump's point, I mean, with the greatest of respect to Zelensky, of those three war aims that Putin had that I talked about earlier, you know, Russian control of the Donbass and the four oblasts, right, where the Russian ethnics needed to be saved from maltreatment by the Ukrainians. That was what the special operation was about initially, if you remember. That's war aim number one. Ukrainian neutrality, not joining NATO, is war aim number two. And I would say quite a distant third behind that is the removal of the Rat King from the rodent throne. Okay. So clearly, they're not going to go for this idea that, oh, you know, Zelensky goes, but Ukraine joins NATO. The red line is the NATO membership, not whether the Rat King sits on the rodent throne. So, you know, nice try, Zelensky, but nobody's going to fall for that. Whereas Trump may see this as being quite attractive. You know, you get resources, says Vlad. You know, we get the things that we're after. We could do a deal here. And I would suggest that the Europeans are going to do whatever they humanly can to stop this being a thing. Seems to me, though, that, you know, the Americans are pretty dead set on the course that they're going down. And I think these positions are irreconcilable. I mean, this is a crisis in Europe. It's a European crisis. And honestly, I just don't know why they don't give up in the short term, regroup, have a peace, and rearm. I mean, that's basically what they need to do. That would be the sensible course of action. But it's the way they're talking. They won't admit in the British media, and none of the talking heads, that whether it's the dude from MI6 or the general or Douglas Murray or Starmer, none of them will admit that Russia have won the war. They're still talking as if Ukraine could win. They're still talking as if they could bring it back from the brink. They're still talking as if they could bring Putin down. This is the level of insanity that we're dealing with. So I don't know how they back down. Because they've gone all in on this. And I think Starmer is gearing up to go all in, all the chips in the middle. And Trump is not going to go for it. I'm telling you now, I have never seen situation where Trump starts the war of words. Do you remember he was calling Zelensky all the names the other day, and Zelensky was firing back? There's no way back from that, right? There's no way back from that. Trump has decided his course of action. Oh, I tell you what, I have no idea what's going to happen. It's interesting times. It's interesting times. I just hope that sense will prevail. And like I said, on Thursday, this is a rapidly developing story. On Thursday, when we actually have that showdown between Starmer and Trump, I may do a special emergency stream, depending on what happens. You know, fingers crossed, there's not going to be a war. Fingers crossed, there's going to be some cucking and some backing down on behalf of Starmer. The thing is that it's like the establishment have put Starmer in a place where any climb down will be seen as a massive humiliation. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe they've set him up for a fall. Maybe this is the way Starmer goes, that, you know, the British public won't forgive Starmer for cucking to Putler and Orange Hitler. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go, but I at the moment, I find it very difficult to understand how there's going to be a climb down, because they've put themselves between a rock and a hard place here. And I honestly don't see Trump backing down from where he's, you know, Trump has put the US on a, you know, that he's had Rubio meeting with Lavrov in Saudi Arabia. You know, he's got the UN, the US UN representatives to vote with Russia. Okay. He's gone into a war of words with Zelensky. I just don't see how Trump backs down now either. Trump is dead set on ending this war under American first principles. But under boom of truth, Britain seems dead set on keeping it going. Just don't know what's going to happen. I've never seen a situation like this pretty much my entire life. It is unprecedented. Who knows? All I know is that if we're ever going to win, and by we, I'm talking about the sensible people who want normality to return to the world, okay? Starmer needs to go before Trump goes. If this fucker is able to keep going up until 2029 and, you know, see out the other side of Trump, this is the regime's insurance policy. Okay, Trump is rapidly trying to dismantle the post-war liberal order. Okay, and maybe he's doing it at such a rate that it won't be possible to put it back together. All I know is that for whatever reason, this fucker Starmer has been put here to do a job. It's obvious. I said it when I went on the Duran, and it's becoming more and more obvious. This guy does not respond to anything. He's like a robot. Full force of the international law. He has to go. We have to find a way to get rid of him before 2028, before there's another American election. Otherwise, I fear badly that the empire will strike back hard. Quite what it is with the British establishment, I do not know. People love to say City of London over and over again. Still doesn't really explain the actions of the entire spectrum of the, you know, all of the media, all of the political parties, all of the establishment. And Starmer, for whatever reason, is there to do a job. Whether he's been sent by Davos or what, I don't know. But all I know is that he has to go, and there can be no victory for anybody in anywhere until he is gone. Macron, if you're French, I can see Macron being agile enough or skilled enough as a politician to pivot a little bit more and to, you know, become more nationalist in French interests and less of a globalist. You know, obviously the Italians have Meloni, and you know, in Germany, they had the elections recently, and the AfD is the second biggest party now. I know their version of the Tory boys, the conservatives in Germany won, and they're keeping that a deal going where they keep the AFD out at all costs. But the fact is that things are going in the right direction in Germany. And even under Angela Merkel, Germany was more open to being friendly with the Russians than, you know, most of the other European powers. It was in their energy interests. And Germany has been truly screwed over by the war in Ukraine, because what Merkel had been building in the deal with Putin there, you know, was massive damage to German energy security and to their manufacturing infrastructure as well. So Germany has been fucked over. Really, Britain, I think, is at the moment looking like the worst. Our establishment is the worst of all of them. It must fall. It must be brought down. Even if it means Britain has to be like a kind of, you know, as Morgoth put it once, a backwater for a little while. Take it, you know, to what time be the timeout. Even if it means Britain has to take a timeout for a while, we need it, because we cannot carry on in this current mode where we're trying to, it's going to be a real problem, I think. It's going to be a real problem. Okay, so let's carry on here. I have a few super thanks to deal with, and then we'll hit the super chats and we'll get out of here. It'll only be a quick stream today. So 7 days ago, where was that? Over on the last office hours, last week. This sounds like warmonger smut prose. And that was when I was reading the article from last week. I mean, maybe it's become one of my favorite things to do now, is reading British media kind of war delusions. I read four more of them earlier on. It is, I mean, the level of delusion in the British press leaves me gobsmacked every time I read it. These people are not operating in the same reality as the rest of the world. They are completely out of their tree, completely mental. And I worry that it's Westminster wide, right? There's even so-called based people who work in and around Westminster. And it's like a kind of disease, it's a contagion. And they, you know, the closer they get to that bubble, the more you see them metamorphosize into sniveling, horrible little Tory boys. And the sniveling, horrible Tory boy always basically takes the Churchillian line on all questions. Every single question is a rearticulation of World War II. Every situation is reinterpreted as, if you take the sensible line, you're Neville Chamberlain. And you have to invoke the spirit of Churchill always, always. Until this mindset is defeated, there's no hope for this country, I'm telling you. I wrote a tweet earlier on saying that this country, Britain, has to get over its obsession with World War II, right? I mean, they talk about the woke mind virus. To me, this is a much worse mind virus. It's like a trauma that has never been healed. And, you know, when they talk, I mean, I'm not into psychologizing, as people know. But from my understanding is that if somebody suffered a trauma, they remain stunted at a certain point in their lives. Let's say it's something happened bad when they were 17 or 18, and they keep on reproducing that situation that happened when they were 17 or 18 over and over and over again. Okay, it's like a kind of, and it's like Britain has been stuck in a trauma loop since World War II. It's never got over it. It's never got over the fact that it gave all of its power, all of its treasure, all of its gold, all of its might, all of its world standing, all of its cultural and political capital, basically to hand it to the bloody Yanks, to give away the empire, to stop, you know, the mad German, right? And it's the justification of Churchill over and over and over again means that you relive the moment of 1939 over and over again. And it's getting to the point where it's beyond a joke now. It really is starting to get very dangerous. Okay. I mean, it seems like Trump has snapped the Americans out of this somehow. Maybe because the Americans have that big, beautiful ocean. Maybe because they were late to the war and they were dragged in by the British in the first place. This kind of World War II mind virus, you know, had a weaker grip in America. I don't know. But here it is thoroughgoing, I'm telling you. And I mean, if you don't believe me, try talking to a normie about any of this stuff. Try to get a normie to see this from the point of view that I've been talking about on my streams. Or this is the one issue where they will lose their minds, I'm telling you. And it's religious. I mean, it's religious in nature. This is the Boomer Truth regime, right? At its hardest core. So, yeah. What will break us out of it? I don't know. You know, Day of the Pillow, maybe. But I was noting that a lot of the authors, a lot of the writers of these articles weren't that old. Douglas Murray is not a boomer. Douglas Murray is not that much older than me. I think Douglas Murray is a Gen Xer, but he still invokes this spirit of Churchill. We'll never surrender. You know, and you get all these figures, you know, and even people who are really quite based in other ways. Like, you know, I remember I did that show at the New Culture Forum. But like on that issue, they're all fully Tory boyed up. They're all fully like Boomer Truth when it comes to this. You know, there's that guy who loves Churchill. I forget his name now. In fact, there's two guys I always get confused. They look like, do you remember that guy from like, who used to do the music with the beard and he had like the cape? Do you remember that comedy show? I always think this guy looks like that. But anyway, there's the guy who really loves Churchill. And then there's the other guy who I confuse him with, Rafe something, who he was actually on Lotus Eaters a couple of weeks back when they did the ranking of the English kings, the tier list, which I still have a bone to pick, by the way, right? Henry the Seventh, Carl, if you watch this, or if somebody wants to tell Carl, everybody writes off Henry the Seventh. Henry the Seventh won at the Battle of Bosworth, okay, ending the War of the Roses. He then established the Tudor dynasty, providentially healed the country, you know, by uniting the houses of Lancaster and York, and then began the biggest program of centralization that the country perhaps has ever seen, thereby consolidating the power of his family. This continued under Henry VIII. But of course, Henry VIII gets all the headlines and because of the six wives and he was a larger-than-life character and the divorce and all of that. You know, the schoolboy imagination is captured by Henry VIII. But really, Henry VII was an extraordinary king. And he doesn't get the plaudits. Person to talk to about that would be David Starkey. I know David Starkey's mentor, G.R. Elton, was a constitutional specialist who specialized in the Tudors, and his hero was Henry the Seventh. So I feel like Henry the Seventh was robbed. If I ever did that, I'd like all the Machiavellian kings, like William the Conqueror was the S tier, you know, feudalism, centralization, you know, the three separate kind of legal spheres. You know, you've got the kind of chivalric order, the parish system, and then the shire system. And he set those three things in parallel. And he set up the kind of free trade zones of the cities. I talk all about this in my lecture on feudalism in Foundations of Shakespeare, which I really go to town on. If you really want to learn a lot about what William the Conqueror set up, you know, take Foundations of Shakespeare, and there's a very large lecture in there where I talk about this. But he was an administrative genius. You know, everybody thinks about, yes, he built loads of castles and so on. William the Conqueror, William the Bastard, whatever you want to call him, everybody wants to go on about the harrowing of the North and so on. Look, in terms of being a great king, he's an S tier. And to be, and in fairness to the Lotus Eaters lads, they did put William as an S tier. Okay, another key administrative king was Edward III. By the time you get to Edward III, the feudal structure had started breaking down, and he put a lot of the pieces back into place. He patched up the system that William had built. You could argue that he didn't do a great job of it because the War of the Roses was around the corner. But in in terms of a king having a long reign, doing what was necessary, being a bit of a Tywin Lannister, I would say Edward III is an S tier. And Henry VII, another great centralizing Machiavellian king. So anyway, I have got sidetracked. What was I even talking about? Oh, yes. That dude and the New Culture Forum guy who loves Churchill are both very Tory boy when it comes to this issue. They're both very Churchillian in their foreign policy. And I really would like the Churchill kind of myth to die for the good of the country. For the good of the country. I mean, if I had been around in the 1930s, I'd have been against Churchill without doubt. I'd have been on the side against Churchill. I've done many, many streams. If you go be in the back catalogue, there was a whole, if you join the channel on the Cigar Stream, I did a whole bunch of streams on World War II, where I was reading from a book, looking at all of the stuff Churchill did. And if you watch my review of A Notion Apart, the Adam Curtis, the early Adam Curtis shows, I talk about all of, we see the villainy of Churchill in those shows as well. Anyway. Next question from Blackudar says, I remember seeing the Russians using some kind of sextant alongside a World War II artillery gun for a precision strike on Ukrainian defenses, and it made me realize that this is the future of warfare. Everyone is going on about AI, unmanned fighter jets, and smart bombs, but the purpose of war is to cause casualties on the other side, not to show off your fancy computers. The arms race these days is one side build a smarter bomb, the other side build a smarter jammer. You can't jam a dumb bomb. Yeah, I kind of agree that the Achilles heel of digital is still analog, and I kind of agree with the assessment that if you go hi-fi, you can go lo-fi to counterbalance it. Let us not forget that a bunch of camel men in Afghanistan outlasted the American army, and as far as I know, the Taliban, just had a couple of AK-47s. Friend Jamin Church says, I have an original copy of a book called Germany's Underground, the Anti-Nazi Resistance. It was written in 1947 by Alan Dulles, OSS officer and the first director of the CIA. It reads like ground zero for Boomer Truth. I wanted to send it to you, but thought that I probably missed the research window for your book. Now that it is in a holding pattern, if you'd like, I'll send it to you. Alternatively, if the book interests you, but you don't want to be bothered getting a first edition, reprints are available online. Thank you very much for that recommendation. Well, what I'll say is, I'll just find my own copy. I'll bookmark now that now. And I'll get myself a copy. I've ordered it off Amazon. As we speak, I'm ordering it on Amazon. I'll get myself a good recent edition. Yes, that's probably one of the missing ingredients for how Boomer Truth was established in the first place. So I will I'll get that in the post. All right. Brastonsky Warrior says, I call the third faction the King's Court. The court only has power if the king listens and if they are actually a court. Well, it's very difficult to tell which faction is in the ascendancy in Trump world. I have a suspicion that, speaking of the mid-century German, the painter, he was famous, wasn't he? For setting different people in parallel to do the same job. And I think Trump may use similar tactics he may have two or three different people tasked with the same thing and set them in opposition, which is classic kind of, I mean, people will say, well, it's dictator tactics, but it's just kind of classic leadership stuff. And I'm sure I've read that Trump was notorious for doing this when he was running businesses as well, because, you know, he loves setting people against each other, having personal shit tests and loyalty tests all the time, and keeping everybody on their toes, right? Keeping everyone on their toes. So that's what I suspect. I suspect that none of the factions are truly ascendant. I think he plays them off against each other. That would be my my take. But I need to read a bit more about that. So if anybody has any insights or whatnot on that particular question, I might make a video on it, you know, in a quiet Newsweek. Mechanome says, I'm half Ukrainian, and as much as I'm hopeful for some kind of peace, I am not looking forward to more humiliation for Ukrainians. I have a family that have fought in the war and have risked their lives for what will amount to nothing. I hear talks through the grapevine of Azov and asked VC members wanting to do some kind of putsch. So I imagine there'll be a lot of chaos and tension with Ukraine when the war ends. Great stream as always, AA. Well, Menachem, first of all, I am sorry for what has happened to Ukraine. Okay. And I have always been against the war because I thought it could have been avoided. A lot of bloodshed could have been avoided had they made that deal in April 2022, right? That didn't happen. Boris Johnson scuppered that deal. Rest is history at this moment. My heart goes out to the Ukrainians because they've had their country absolutely torn apart by this. I have heard that one of the reasons Zelensky can't go is because they'll kill him. I have heard that numerous times. I don't really know enough about the internal workings of Ukraine. The one thing I do know about is that the Durand guys and Judge Knapp and so on have mentioned on several occasions that Zelensky is MI6's man. The CIA had a different dude who was reporting into them. He's gone now, but Zelensky is MI6's dude. And they've got a different, if Zelensky goes, they've got a different person that they want to parachute in there. Whether the internal politics, the Azov and so on, will allow that to happen, I don't know. But I have heard more than once that Zelensky actually reports to London rather than Washington, which, given the insane stance of the British government, may make sense. I don't know. Captain Smith says, thanks to the algorithm, I found Gareth Icke has a channel where he walks along old railway lines and historic places. There's a video of him and David walking around Leicester. No politics, just cozy content. Now, is Gareth Icke the guy who also presents that other show they've got called Trending or something like that? I think it may be the same guy. Gareth Icke has got a band. Gareth Icke has done a lot of things, hasn't he? I'm looking now. Interesting. Very interesting. Honzel says, read and listen to Douglas Hogan, Singularity Metaverse. He shows the tie-ins of this, which is the tech bro agenda. That is on the three reasons why Israel supports Donald Trump. I have a feeling, by the way, that that video, I never usually say this, right? I never usually say this. But I think that video, three reasons why Israel supports Trump, was suppressed. I believe that was suppressed in the algorithm because it did significantly lower numbers than all of the other videos last week. And there's no reason for that, right? There's no like Trump in the title, Israel in the title. You know, there's no reason why that video shouldn't have done really well. But I got a funny feeling that that one was suppressed by Algo. Golden Age Puritan says, considering your own political and philosophical evolution, this is on J.D. Vance's Forcing Europe to Be Free, and it's working. Do you not think it is possible that Vance could have involved too? Could Fuentes be wrong about Vance being Mossad? His take, it was eloquent, but my gut just senses a sickness in Fuentes' overall spirit, even if some of his takes make sense. I mean, the fact that the connection with Vance goes all the way back to his early career and that he was handpicked and kind of made in the way that Fuentes outlines makes me extremely, extremely cynical about him having organic road to Damascus conversions along the way that just so happens to result in him being the vice president. I mean, I wasn't born yesterday and neither were you. So I don't know why, right? If all of your knowledge of the world brings you to a place to be like, okay, well, there's a lot of question marks about this guy. Okay. Therefore, my brain tells me I shouldn't trust him. Right. Now you're asking me to overlook all of those things, in Vance's history, to explain away something that has resulted in him being very, very close to power. Okay. No, I'm not going to do it. If I was being paid large amounts of money by Peter Thiel, like some of the other people you may watch on YouTube, maybe I'd have a different answer. But the fact is I'm not, right? And so if Peter Thiel wants me to, you know, buy J.D. Vance's story, Peter Thiel can give me lots of money. He's not going to do that. So I'm going to continue telling you the truth, which is you should be wary about a creature like J.D. Vance. And a lot of the OGs, a lot of the old time, don't forget, a lot of the people who are skeptical about Vance have been around for a very long time. They've been around since 2016. They know who he is. They know where he came from. Okay? They're people who have seen the movement kind of come up and come down. Or they could come up and come up, whichever, or make peace with various figures in the deep or the deeper state. Okay. And it's not just Fuentes. If it was just Fuentes, it would be one thing. It's not. Dickie Spencer, Pedro Gonzalez, RFH. These are all people who don't really see eye to eye. And there's more of them too. Vox Day, he's another one who's been around for a very long time. Vox Day is somebody who's been on the Trump train much more than some of those other people as well. He is skeptical about J.D. Vance. These are all independent voices who I know for sure are not paid off. Okay. Whereas some of those other people who I know for sure are paid off then want you to take a kind of child's eye view of J.D. Vance. Well, I'm not prepared to do it. I'd only be prepared to do it for large amounts of money. But I'm not being paid. If I suddenly be like, oh yeah, I'm 100% on board with J.D. Vance. It was, I fully believe all of his Road to Damascus conversions and he's the best thing going since sliced bread and he's absolutely based. And I'm 100% on the J.D. Vance train and he should be the next president. You, friend, should know that I have then been paid off and been brought into the Thiel network. That has not happened. And I haven't had a phone call and I haven't had an email saying, hey, Dr. Barbini, here's a massive bag of money. Stop talking shit about J.D. Vance. Well, that hasn't happened. So, and until it does, I'm going to continue telling the truth. not that I would take that money in the first place, of course. Alphonse Rides Again says, but hey, I thought Trump was declaring war on the City of London and ushering in a golden age by triggering a global financial collapse. Only people who really understand the markets know this. That was a video on the Israel supports Donald Trump. Well, I mean, I will say that he is certainly at odds with the City of London. So that's a point. That was a tick in the column of the Stormy Waters crowd. I remember I listened to a stream with Stormy Waters who predicted that Netanyahu would not survive 45 days. I put a counter on that. I remember when he said it, and I made a tweet on the day that he said it. And I will check when that 45-day point comes, whether Netanyahu is still there or not. Okay, because the one thing about predictions, especially when they're testable, is that we can go back and test them against reality. And if the, you know, if we come to the end of the year and Netanyahu's still there and the global financial order has not collapsed, then you know that these people make predictions that don't come true. I have retired from the predictions game because, you know, I found that when I made predictions that do definitively come true, people don't admit it. Again, probably because they're paid off. Randev says, what better way to end the slop article than a fake quote? You're given a choice between war and dishonor. You chose dishonor and you will have war. But then again, if first Churchill was whitewashed into a hero, I'm sure his second coming can get the same treatment and grandkids will learn of valiant great masterminds of this war. Blame for all failures appropriately shifted towards cavalry. That is always too late. That was on what drives Britain's fanatical support for Ukraine. Friend Jermaine Church says this was on the ugly truth about Trump's tariff plan. That video set a cat among the pigeons. Lots of people said it was a great video. Other people just came in to attack because they've got pathological. I mean, there must be something that's the opposite of Trump derangement syndrome, which is that you reflexively see Trump derangement in any criticism of Trump whatsoever and therefore lash out. And there was certainly a degree of that in that video. Other people were accusing me of being like a libertarian and saying that I was reflexively against tariffs. Those people clearly did not watch the video, because what I said was it matters what you put tariffs on. And in the 19th century, they put tariffs on finished goods, manufacturers, not on intermediary goods and raw materials. What Michael Hudson was saying was Trump is putting tariffs on things that are going to affect the entire structure of production. That is, things in the middle of the supply chain that will only result in making goods more expensive, which is not actually going to bring about the resurrection of factories in Detroit. So that's what Hudson was saying. That's what I kind of agree with him. That's just value-free analysis. That's not like having a go at Trump. But anyway, he says, possibly Trump does know what he's doing. Yes, the supply chain structure has changed since the 19th century, but it appears that they may be on the cusp of changing again. Can any nation or empire secure the sea lanes now? It's been shown how effective and dangerous $10,000 drones and missiles are against billion-dollar ships. Onshoring may make sense in that context. Yeah, but really, the countries in question here are Canada and Mexico. You know, in most cases, the critical supply chain components and the raw materials are either coming from Canada or Mexico. And the question is, can all of those things be relocated to America? I read a statistic the other day that America gets 99% of its natural gas from Canada. Can it reproduce that? Can it, you know, can it get all 99% of that natural gas from American sources? That's a genuine question. That's a genuine question. So, Benjamin Church also says, my previous comment did not account for the second half of the video, in which taxing raw materials was discussed. I was focusing on securing key industries domestically in that comment, which both COVID and the Houthis have shown is wise. Getting your antibiotics from neutral or hostile countries across the globe seems increasingly dubious. No, I would agree with all of that. I'm not against those sorts of things. What that video was about was really, you know, it's not tariffs per se, it's what you tariff, specifically what you're doing. A lot of people were saying, well, Trump doesn't really mean it. He's using it as a negotiation strategy. And maybe that's the case. Maybe that's the case. But there's only so many times he's going to be able to go to that well, I would suggest. And in some of those cases, I mean, a very good article was written by Mike from Imperium Press, who happens to be Canadian. And some of the stats that he revealed in that article are kind of surprising. Canada has got more. Like the trade relationship between Canada and America is not as one-sided as Trump suggests, actually. So I would recommend reading that article. It's a couple of weeks old now. Honzel says the Sanhedrin, yes, the Sanhedrin wrote an open letter to Trump and thanked him for helping to impose Noahide laws. Trump is fully committed to the campaign for Armageddon. Remember those Trump Messiah video memes? That was a primer. That was, again, on three reasons why Israel supports Donald Trump. Yes, I have no doubt that Trump is fully in the tank for Israel. There is no doubt about that whatsoever. And no matter how many people, Pete, if you're listening, or anyone else who says, oh, well, pay attention to who thinks they're winning. I mean, as I said in that video, I keep paying attention, and all I see is like 100% string of W's for that little country in the Middle East, right? I don't see any 10, 15D, 42D chess moves to suggest otherwise. And at some point, people have to stop making things up, basically, right? You just have to come to terms with the fact that, okay, even if you support Trump, he's not a perfect vessel, right? And he comes with those strings attached. So maybe, you know, some bit of your country is saved, but not all of it. Benjamin Church says, last comment, Bakira's comment that maybe Trump doesn't realize that America today is a very different, structurally different place is very silly and uncharitable comment, even directed to a man such as Trump. Well, I don't know about that because, you know, you say what you want about Trump. I've never got the impression that Trump's understanding of anything is much greater than his extremely 1980s transactional bottom line real estate way of looking at the world. Okay, now you could say, well, oh, that's very uncharitable. We have to actually pretend that Trump, you know, has got a much more sophisticated understanding of things. I've seen no evidence of that. We're talking about a man who went and, you know, talked about one of the conflicts of our time, you know, Israel versus Gaza, and talked about it in terms of being a real estate deal and turning Gaza into the Riviera. Beautiful casinos, beautiful hotels, okay? We're talking about a man who is approaching the Russia-Ukraine situation purely in transactional terms. Let's make a deal, the art of the deal, over and over and over again, okay? Now, there can be good sides of that and there can be bad sides of that, okay? The good side is that it actually breaks through. It actually changes what happens, and it, because he comes at everything in a different way, right? So he makes things possible that were not possible before. But the downside is that there is a kind of crudeness to that. There's a kind of crudeness in the way Trump does things. And with that, you lose some sophistication. But if Trump truly is a lion elite as opposed to a fox elite, you have to expect a bit of crudeness. That's basically what happens when you have a new type of leader. Trump, for good or for ill, wants to see himself as sees himself and wants to be a strong man. He respects strength and he despises weakness. Right, it's just a different way of seeing the world. You know, for good or for ill. Franustic 988 says, "Hey, you said you're not a fan of Scott Ridley. Having recently rewatched Gladiator, it seems severely overhyped. If you remove the soundtrack and the iconic villain, you are left with a basic revenge plot and a nice set dressing. Also, with my views, the political dimension of the movie is unfortunate. Savior of the Empire overthrown by the oligarchs, betrayed by his sister, who, by the way, cheated her own son from inheriting the throne. Your thoughts about that? P.S. You skipped my super thanks on why the U.S. Empire will uphold colorblind liberalism." Yeah, I don't have a lot of time for Ridley Scott. I think he's... you know, he's lucky to have the career that he's had. He's given a lot of very big franchise movies. He's made a lot of kind of big blockbuster films, but I just don't like him. I don't like Steven Spielberg either. There's something about a certain type of Hollywood director I don't like, and Ridley Scott is one of them. What is the super chat that I missed? The super thanks that I missed? Oh, yes, here we are. No, that's a different one from... uh, I can't find that. It must have not come through because I can't find it. I can see an old super thanks of yours, mate, but it's not on that video. It's on the, it's on a different video. It's on European globalists versus American nationalists. Who's going to win? So maybe that didn't come through. Don't think that came through. Okay. George says, my contention meltdown is because, so this was from the video earlier on today from George. My contention is that the meltdown is because the international monetary system is changing with Trump, and when Trump and Putin meet, it will be based on a gold for oil arrangement, and it will not be favorable to Britain or Europe. It will also shift politics inevitably to the right. I did note, by the way, that Trump, when he met with Macron, happened to mention that he's getting Fort Knox audited. Right? Why is he getting Fort Knox audited? Right? The gold reserves, he's getting audited. Think about it. Why are the Ukraine negotiations taking place in Saudi Arabia, of all places? Why is the UAE and Iran involved? These are not important players in the Ukraine war, but they are key oil producers. I am hoping to publish a piece on this in Conservative Woman this week. Check it out if you want to hear my thesis. Well, George, I don't know if you follow me on Twitter, but if you link me that, I'd be very interested to read it, because these are, you know what they talk about? Nothing ever happens, and then loads of things happen in the space of 1 week. We are in one of those weeks right now. This is a world-changing week, I'm telling you. Things are about to never be the same again, for good or for ill. So, yeah, I'd be very interested in that. So do send it to me. John Lister says, is there a reason why Unpopular Opinions 1.9 is such a high tier ship membership tier? Unpopular Opinions 1.9. That's a very early show. Why is it so high tier? Let's have a look. I don't really know. Oh, yeah, I know now. I know why. Yeah, okay, there is a reason why that one is a high tier ship level. There were some unexpected guests on that stream, I seem to recall. So that's why it's put up there. All right, so let us hit some super chats now. I forgot to put Entropy Live. Sorry about that, guys. I'll put Entropy Live now. But I, because I was so exercised about the prospect of war, I forgot to put it on. Let me put that on now, and I'll do the entropy second today. Here's a link in the... I always forget something, but I actually did forget the entropy today. Let me do it. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let me have a look. Coney says, when the war ends, we can go to back to calling Kyiv, Kiev. For a while now, Waitrose has been calling chicken Kievs, chicken Kievs. Well, some of us never stop saying Kiev, of course. I usually say Kyiv in mockery of the media. But, Leonard says, empty rhetoric and posturing from Starmer for when Ukraine inevitably capitulates. We wanted to push on to the end. It was America that gave in. The thing is that all of this rhetoric is setting up the British establishment for a massive kind of face plant moment, massive egg on face. They're setting themselves up for a massive loss, and I just don't understand why. Firestorm says, it's getting hard to ignore the school of schizo take that this is intentional depopulation rather than grand strategy at work. Well, I mean, every explanation that I've seen doesn't fully explain it. So add that one to the list. why not? It's as good as all the other ones. TP says, from an accelerationist perspective, war with Russia might kickstart the remigration efforts. Oh, well, here's an idea. Why don't we get all of the people who enrich our country so much to enlist? Send them to Ukraine, them first. Then they can prove their mettle, eh? If you want to prove your allegiance to this country, do it in the old-fashioned way. Come on, Pradeep, into the uniform. Come on, Jamal, you know you want to. Yes, you can take your grime music with you. Yes, it's okay. As long as you're prepared to fight for king and country. Let's carry on. The English loyalist says, reminds me of the scene of a war when the politicians and people call for it in the charge of the Light Brigade. I fear AAC Englishmen and boys will die while the foreigner will stay behind and not fight. Yeah, that's something I worry about as well. But if I was the British government and they're dead set on this, they should go with my strategy of conscripting the foreigners first, right, in order to prove their allegiance to the country. Go on, Abdul. Look, it's important that you do this. You want to be British, don't you, after all? Go on, Ali. For God and country. Oh, but my God is Allah, sir. It doesn't matter, whatever. Go on, into the uniform. I mean, maybe you could solve an issue, you know? Yeah, in dream world, we all know that's not going to happen. Joe B. Hume says, EU leaders need the enemy of Russia to justify EU defence forces. That's why we've had a hollowing of our own army. UK column did great coverage of this plan. If you could tell me the exact episodes of UK column that covered that, I will go and review them because I'm very interested to know what the hell they're doing. Firestorm 189 says, do you think Britain would be best off joining the EU power bloc and being relegated to minor power to remain the EU's euro wedge and relentlessly subverted? I struggle to see the positives in either. Now, I would prefer Britain to take a time out and to step back for a while and to just, you know, maybe take a 50, 60, 70 year time out from all of this geopolitics stuff and just chill out for a while. You know, concentrate on defending these islands. Britain has still got tremendous. I mean, if I get my Mackinder map back out, where's my Mackinder? Right, if you remember when I showed this map here, from the point of view of Russia, it's extremely hard to get to Britain. Like, to get here, they'd have to go through Poland, Czechoslovakia, Slovakia, Germany, France, you know, the Netherlands. Or if they wanted to come by sea, they'd have to get past the Scandies. They'd have to get past this little bit of Denmark here. It's very hard to get here. Or they'd have to come round the back and conquer Ireland and launch an invasion from Ireland. None of those things are going to happen, right? So, from, you know, if we're talking about, if we're going to take seriously for a moment the idea of an isolationist Britain for a while, you know, just it's still a very hard place to attack. Still very hard. So, you know, just go back to basics for a while. Even, you know, in successive points in history, the British took to the hills. They took to the mountains. And they were very, very hard to beat, the longbowmen. That's why, if you want to go back to the Normans came up with the yeoman archers, right? That was because they lost so many men, you know, in trying to take the country against the archers in the hills. Very hard place to attack historically. Britain has been. So yeah, let's carry on. Horace Lupercal says, I think you should do a deep dive into Yarvin's point of view, how money has no power and media and academia control finance, I personally think it's dumb. But why would I want to do that? Why would I want to use it in a dialectical, you know, dialectics and no dialogue, remember? Right? You only engage with a point of view, right? If you engage with a point of view, you end up boosting, you end up signal boosting that point of view and entering into dialogue with it. Step over. You don't need to. It's de facto stupid, and it's been proven to be stupid. So there's no reason to keep on going back to it. Unless, of course, you've been paid off, in which case, carry on talking about it forever, even though it's been categorically disproven by Elon Musk himself. Jacob Lowe says, Putin and now Trump's reaction to Putin have truly smashed the end of history theory into pieces, exposing its believers truly for who they are. Yeah, I agree. I agree. I actually think Putin has ended the liberal, the post-war liberal order. And he has brought the world kicking and screaming back to reality. Back to reality. Oh, there goes gravity. We could rewrite it. Back to reality. Oh, there goes Vlad, ain't he? Something like that. Yeah, so, you know, somebody more talented than me could maybe, you know. And Trump really is the American expression of realism as well. I think Trump represents a return to realism on the world stage as he has recognized at some level that America is not the sole world hegemon anymore. So he's prepared to share the spoils with a man like Putin. P.S. says, every time Zelensky goes on TV, he enrages the right. He bragged about how he wouldn't ever pay back the money he claimed was a loan. A beggar who acts like a king. He's headed for a horrible ending. Yeah, it was always coming. It was always coming. And, you know, it's one of those things that people who, like, you know, raved about Zelensky will, like, in 10 years' time, they'll deny they ever had those views. But some people will remember who was always on the side of the righteous and the true, while the sniveling Tory boys won't admit it until it's long past the point of sale. Even now, the Tory boys are maximalist on Ukraine. Even now, they refuse to admit that Russia have won. Even now, they ape every single government line to the hilt. In fact, the Tory boys have become complete Trump derangement syndrome since this episode started, all day, every day on Twitter. Firestorm says, Fukuyama and Pinker so BTFO'd it's unreal. Yes. PS says, Elon going to be meeting and punish two-tier Kia. Well, we'll see. Thing is, I don't think Keir Starmer responds. I think he's going to be robotic and belligerent to every single thing. He's just not going to respond in a way that we might. He's going to dig in, I think. They call him one tier Kia, but really the two tier Kia, but really they should call him one gear Kia because he's only got one gear. Frayn Sustik says, when will Europe stop being ruled by coalitions of losers, as Mercurius says? Conservatives literally shake hands with commies and import foreigners. Yeah, absolutely. TP says, we are ruled by paedophilic death cults. They delight in sacrifice. So Starmer's actions make sense if he is a golem who is there to destroy Britain. Well, I mean, like I've been saying, all theories are equal in a situation where we have no idea what the hell they're doing or why they're doing it. You know, that's as convincing as any other explanation I've heard. UTIS says, Russia is spending 6% of GDP on military. The 40% is a Western fantasy. Europe without Russia is nothing. With it, it is a superpower. I mean, well, that's what the Ukraine war was there to prevent, wasn't it? Was Germany and Russia ever buddying up? Remember, that's the Mackinder doomsday, right? Do you remember? Whoever controls the heartland controls the world. Remember? So all of Western Islander strategy, Britain's strategy, is to prevent, is to drive a wedge between Germany and the Horde, basically. TP says, best British comedy series or film? Well, there's the Carry On series, which I did the video on, over on AA Culture, if you want to watch that. I did a video on... but in terms of best British comedy series, this will probably upset a lot of people, but I think The Office is high art. I believe The Office is truly a masterpiece in television history. Not the American one, obviously. The one with Gervais, David Brent. I still think it holds up pretty well. And it's devastating. Tim from The Office and his shit little romance with Dawn, and it's how small scale it is, how sad it is, you know, Swindon Branch and all of that. I fucking love The Office. I love how depressing it is, you know. Love how depressing it is. Frame Sustick says, when will Putin be recognized for healing in the 19th century, though? Well, I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I do think that Putin is on the cusp of cementing his place in history as a great man of history. He's already, like I would say, 90% of the way there. He just needs a resolution to this war, and that's it. Putin will, you know, by the time we get to Civilization 15 or something, we may actually get Putin as the civ leader for Russia, and Trump. You know, we may actually get a Trump as the civ leader one day as well. Yeah, certainly it's a return to great man politics. NATO says, will Blair... Oh, sorry, not the 19th... Sorry. He didn't mean... he didn't mean the 19th century. He meant the coup. Sorry. Oh, I see what you're saying. The Ukraine war ended COVID. Yes, yes, yes. Gervais is no Iannucci, says Bill Wilson. The Thick of It is great as well. The Thick of It is really good as well, I would say. I mean, I like Fawlty Towers. I mean, I love Steptoe and Son. It's so dark, so bleak. That's the thing about British comedy. It has to be dark. It has to be bleak. It has to take hope and crush it. The average Steptoe and Son episode where Harold finally sees his escape and the old man using psychological manipulation and emotional blackmail, keeping him stranded there. British comedy is all about being trapped in a situation. You are literally trapped by the situation. And it doesn't matter whether it's Harold Steptoe, Basil Fawlty, Rodney Trotter is trapped by his brother in that situation. They're all trying to get out of the horrible strictures of class. Tim from The Office is stuck in that office. And by the end of every episode, reality comes crashing back in and they're stuck, stranded. Oh, I love it. It's so bleak. I love the bleakness. NATO says, will Blair use the draft to bring in digital IDs? I have noticed that old Tone is on Maneuvers. Tone is on Maneuvers. And there was a story in the paper from last week saying that he has been secretly meeting with Labour MPs in private, holding private dinner parties for select MPs, trying to spot talent for the future. And so has Lord Mandelson. So the Blairites are sneakily, literally in the background, holding private meetings and scheming. Quite what they are up to, nobody knows for sure. But yes, the Dark Lord is on Maneuvers, ladies and gentlemen. It has been reported. And that, my friends, is... Oh, no, there's a couple more. Clive Bigsby says, nutrition and physical degradation, Weston A. Price. I must implore you to check this out. Okay, that's another great book recommendation. And Tom says, if they try to draft us, what do you think will actually happen? Oh, God knows. I mean, we could see a full-scale revolt. But then again... we could see pigs fly one day as well. All right, do pick up courses at the Academic Agency. I should have a Dark Synth video coming soon, although when that will be, I'm not sure. I've got it all written out. I've got all the material for it. I just need time to put it together. I shall be back tomorrow for Deepest Lore, Adam Curtis review with Simon Roberts. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.